I want to go ahead and introduce our speaker before we have a hymn. Most of you, I hope, have got to experience this wonderful singer-songwriter before. I want to read his latest bio because I really enjoy it. And I'm sure he didn't write this. I'm sure a fan wrote it. It says, cross two famous guys named Brooks, Garth and Mel, and you get Austin singer-songwriter Steve Brooks, a classic Texas troubadour who tells stories of humor, heartbreak, and Cracker Barrel philosophy. His songs have been recorded by more than a dozen Americana artists. He wrote a song a week for Jim Hightower's nationally syndicated radio show and appeared on TV's I've Got a Secret as six-time world pun champion. He's very good at that. He's also a nationally known spiritual speaker who's presented services at more than 40 Unity and Unitarian churches. On top of his solo career, Steve recently joined the legendary 60s folk trio, the Limelighters. Writes Stave Magazine, he is simply the most clever man you'll ever hear with a guitar. And you can sample his music at his website, www.stevebrooks.net. Now, I'll share the words to our hymn, and please sing along as you are muted. Let's hope I have the words there. Aha. Okay, Steve, you're on.
It came upon the midnight clear, that glorious song of old, from angels bending near the earth to touch their harps of gold. He's on the earth, goodwill, goodwill, from heaven the news we bring. The world in silent stillness lay to hear the angels sing. Still through the cloven skies they come with peaceful wings unfurled, and still their heavenly music floats o'er all the love song which they bring. Oh, hush the noise of battle strife and hear the angels sing. For lo, the days are hastening on, my prophet bards foretold, when with the ever-circling years comes round the age of gold, when peace shall over all the earth its ancient splendors fling, and the whole world give back the song which now the angels sing.
Thank you, Steve. Now we have a responsive reading that Stan and I will do, and I hope you will read along. I will read the bold, and then Stan and you all will read the unbold. They told me that when Jesus was born, a star appeared in the heavens above the place where the young child lay.
When I was very young, I had no trouble believing wondrous things. I believed in the star.
It was a wonderful miracle, part of a long-ago story foretelling an uncommon life.
They told me a supernova appeared in the heavens in its dying burst of fire.
When I was older and believed in science and reason, I believed the story of the star explained.
But I found out I was unwilling to give up the star, fitting symbol for the birth of one whose uncommon life has long been remembered.
the star explained became the star understood for Jesus, for Buddha, for Zarathustra.
Why not a star? Some bright star shines somewhere in the heavens each time a child is born.
Who knows what it may foretell?
Who knows what uncommon life may yet again unfold if we but give it a chance?
Now I will turn the service over to Steve. I want to remind you that you would probably enjoy speaker view while he's doing his talk.
Well, good morning, everyone, and happy holiday season. It's going to be a sermon in songs where I'll be singing some of my favorite songs from the holiday season and talking a bit about what they mean to me and how they relate to the meanings of Christmas. The opening and closing song, I will be joined by Deborah Schmidt. Here we go. Let's try that once more. Forgot to take my glasses off.
They said there'd be snow on Christmas. They said there'd be peace on earth. Instead, it just kept on raining, a veil of tears for the virgin's birth. I remember one Christmas morning, winter's light and a distant choir, the peal of the bell, that Christmas tree smell, and eyes full of tinsel and fire. They sold me a dream of Christmas. They sold me a silent night. They told me a fairy story until I believed in the Israelite. And I believed in Father Christmas. I looked to the sky with excited eyes. I woke with a yawn to the first light of dawn, and I saw him and through his disguise. I wish you a hopeful Christmas, and I wish you a brave new year. May all anguish, pain, and sadness leave your heart and let your road be clear. They said there'd be snow on Christmas. They said there'd be peace on earth. Hallelujah, Noel, be it heaven or hell, the Christmas we get, we deserve.
What is the true meaning of Christmas? How strange it is that anyone should ask. After all, we don't ask that question about any other holiday. We know the meaning of Easter. There's no mystery about the 4th of July. When we puzzle over the true meaning of Christmas, it's just two things. The holiday has many different meanings, and some of those meanings are false. For the rock singer Greg Lake of Emerson, Lake & Palmer, Christmas is a struggle between faith and disillusionment. They said there'd be snow on Christmas. Instead, he gets rain. He wakes up early on Christmas morning and he discovers who is really placing presents under the Christmas tree. He's still waiting for peace on earth, as are we. The meaning of Christmas, the singer wistfully concludes, is up to each of us to decide for ourselves. As he puts it, more poetically, the Christmas we get, we deserve. So, rather than talk about the meaning of Christmas, it makes more sense to me to talk about the meanings of Christmas. After 2,000 years, they are many and varied. And because it's the most musical of holidays, I propose not just to talk about them, but to sing about them. We each have our own personal soundtracks for Christmas and its kindred celebrations for the turning of the year. This morning, I'd like to share with you a little of my soundtrack. I'll get started with a song that's not generally thought of as a Christmas song. It is, however, about the reason for the season. No, it's not about the babe in the manger. He was a relative latecomer to the tradition of the winter solstice. There is no evidence in the gospel stories that he was actually born in the bleak midwinter. And there's a lot of evidence that 3 centuries later, his birthday party got grafted onto a Roman festival, which honored a sun god and which fell on the date of December 25th. But even the Romans came late to the eggnog. As long as there have been religions, human beings have treated the shortest day and the longest night as a sacred time. It's not hard to imagine why. In practical terms, the advent of longer days meant that next year's crops would get safely planted. In spiritual terms, it meant that in the eternal struggle between light and darkness, the light was gaining the upper hand. It's no accident that most holiday celebrations around the world involve lights. Hanukkah burns 9 candles to commemorate an ancient miracle. Hindus burn oil lamps for Diwali, the festival of light, which marks the triumph of light over darkness and knowledge over ignorance. So, when Christians commemorate the birth of the sun, they are following a celebration that is thousands of years older, the birth of the sun. And you are welcome to sing along while you're muted on this song or any of the other songs in this service.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. And I say, it's all right. It's been here. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. And I say, it's all right. Little darling, the smiles returning to their faces. Little darling, it seems like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun. comes the sun, I say, it's all right.
Among us can remember bits and pieces of their first year or two on this planet. I can actually recall a few. I have flashes of memory of sucking on a bottle and sometimes on a pacifier. Later on, I can picture the high chair and a spoonful of goopy baby food. With a shudder, I remember diaper rash. I suspect that the reason I remember these particular images is that I had just been given names for them. Language fixes things in our minds. Before words, it's all an amorphous mass of color, sound, and sensation. We have a name for that pre-verbal condition. We call it innocence. The man that we honor on December 25th had a lot to say about innocence and about children. To enter the kingdom of heaven, he said, meant becoming like a little child. Elsewhere, he described it as being born again of the Spirit. If I forget about the definitions that I've heard all my life, and if I open myself to fresh ideas about what it means to be born again, then I find that Jesus is describing a state of mind that is common to many religions. It is what Zen Buddhism calls the beginner's mind, and what Ram Dass meant by be here now. To see the world without the filter of language and without the mental scaffolding that I've built up over the years is to see it as if for the first time. It's like the first time I ever saw a flower or a butterfly. It is to see the kingdom of heaven, which is not some faraway place up in the sky. Jesus insisted that it's all around us, and people don't see it. One place that we can and we do see it is in the eyes of a newborn baby. It's not only an expression of innocence, it's an expression of infinite possibility. As the poet Wordsworth put it, trailing clouds of glory do we come. Which for me is the central message of the divine child in the manger. A picture of the baby Jesus reminds me that every child born is a divine child, a gateway between our adult egos and a transcendence that glimmers beyond. When I commune with an infant, I get a reminder a beginner's mind. I'm reminded, too, that although a child eventually grows up, we never outgrow ourselves. Pop psychology tells us about our inner child, a vulnerable character in our psyches who still needs our adult souls, our adult selves to nurture and protect it. If my inner child ain't happy, ain't no one happy. Then again, I have found in my own experience that when I do acknowledge my inner child, miracles can happen. I tap into a part of my spirit that is brimming with joy and creativity. I see possibilities I haven't seen before. The mythological story of Christmas reminds us that on any day of our lives, it can happen to us, that unto us a child is born.
There's a day that comes round every year when the nights are at their longest. We dedicate our hope and our fear to the ones who are the youngest. Day of the children, day of the children, day of the child. There's a story told in every home of a babe who lies in straw, and from far and wide the wise men come to stand and watch in awe. They bring him gold and frankincense to burn in celebration, as the wonder of his innocence lights up the whole creation. Day of the children, day of the children, day of the child. For unto us a child is born, a son or daughter given. Let it be on earth this born, the way it is in heaven. Two thousand years have come and gone, we still recall that story. Child is come with a face that's full of glory. He will someday wear his crown of thorns and carry his own cross. Looking in his eyes so wide and warm, I remember what I've lost. Day of the children, day of the children, day of the child. As we share the mystery of God in human form, the miracle lives inside of me, and another child is born. Day of the children, day of the children, day of the children.
Well, I have spoken of the holidays as a season of light, but like any religious phenomenon, it has a shadow side. It's a time of year when rates of depression soar. It's wonderful to have home, family, or friends to share it with. But not everyone is so fortunate. If someone is already isolated, the holidays can increase the sense of isolation, and that's all before a pandemic. Isolation and depression can lead to anger and resentment. We see it in many classic Christmas characters, like Ebenezer Scrooge, or and the writer Theodore Geisel, better known as Dr. Seuss. He brought the dark side of Christmas to life as a character called the Grinch. His bitterness is so extreme that his fingers grow hairy and his skin turns an envious shade of green. Like Scrooge, the Grinch ultimately leads us to a happier Christmas theme, the possibility of redemption. Early in the story, he sees the holiday as an orgy of materialism and greed. But once he has done his dastardly deed, and he has vacuumed up all the presents of the children of Whoville, he experiences a moment of cognitive dissonance. In spite of his worst efforts, he hears the distant voices of its citizens singing. He meditates for 3 hours until he reaches a sort of enlightenment.
Maybe Christmas,
he thought,
doesn't come from a store.
Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more. But let's be honest. What makes characters like Scrooge and the Grinch so popular, I suspect, is that they are secretly speaking for the rest of us. Who does not find the season downright annoying sometimes? From the forced cheerfulness, the purgatory of Christmas shopping, the syrupy songs, I'm talking to you, Paul McCartney, to the dismal fact that it kicks off right after Halloween. Just as Christmas reminds us of our inner child, so it can bring out our inner Grinch. Now, I'll bet you can imagine which song is coming.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel. You're a monster, Mr. Grinch. Your heart's an empty hole. Your brain is filled with spiders. You got garlic in your soul, Mr. Grinch. I wouldn't touch you with a 39 and a half foot pole. You're a vile one, Mr. Grinch. There's termites in your smile. You have all the tender sweetness of a seasick crocodile, Mr. Grinch. Given the choice between the two of you, I'd take the seasick crocodile. You're a rotter, Mr. Grinch. You're the king of sinful sots. Your heart's a dead tomato filled with moldy purple spots, Mr. Grinch. Your soul is an appalling dump heap overflowing with the most disgraceful assortment of rubbish imaginable. Mangled up and tangled up nuts. You nauseate me, Mr. Grinch, with a nauseous super nos. You're a crooked jerky jockey, and you ride a crooked hoss, Mr. Grinch. Why, you're a triple-decker toadstool and sauerkraut sandwich with arsenic sauce. You're a foul one, Mr. Grinch. You're a nasty, wasty skunk. Your heart is filled with unwashed socks. Your soul is filled with gunk, Mr. Grinch. The three words which best describe you are as follows, and I quote, all together now, stink, stank, stunk.
When you really think about it, it is strange indeed that Christmas should be associated with peace on earth. To put it charitably, Christianity has had an ambivalent history on the subject. It has long been at war with itself over the idea of peace. Even that lofty passage peace on earth, goodwill to men, is probably a bad translation. According to modern Bible scholars, the Greek text translates more accurately as on earth, peace to men of goodwill. In other words, the peace of which the angels sing is really the state of inner peace enjoyed by true believers, the peace that passeth all understanding. For the outer world, on the other hand, peace remains in short supply. Jesus foresees tribulations for both believers and non-believers. And that's just a warm-up for the book of Revelations, which has been cited over the millennia to justify every conceivable kind of atrocity, from the Crusades to nuclear war. At the same time, Jesus praises peacemakers. He counsels his followers not to repay evil with evil, and he lives by his words. He also dies by them. It's passages like these that have inspired a Christian counterculture over the centuries. There's a tradition of nonviolent action that runs from the early martyrs on through St. Francis and on to modern peace workers like Dorothy Day and the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Those ideas inspired Gandhi, who made the comment, "You Christians are so unlike your Christ." That yawning gap between religious ideals and religious practice was on the mind of Edmund Sears, a Unitarian pastor in Wayland, Massachusetts, in 1849. It was in the wake of our country's invasion of Mexico, and he turned the story of the angels and the shepherds into an anti-war parable. It came upon the midnight clear. Sears wrote that although the angels have sung through 2,000 years of bloodshed, a day will come when humanity will finally sing the song of peace back to the angels. A century and a half later, we are still trying to write that song. One who attempted in our era was John Lennon, whose unpeaceful death we commemorated 40 years ago last week. In 1971, at the height of the Vietnam War, Lennon could easily have sung a song that was a savage and angry attack on hypocrisy. He had already written plenty of those songs, but he had learned a lesson from the success of his atheist hymn, Imagine. As Lennon himself put it, "Now I understand what you have to do. Put your political message across with a little honey." So, the horrors of war are never spelled out in the song. Lennon makes them more powerful by implying them. When he speaks of the rich and the poor, the black and the white, he knows that his listeners will fill in the blanks. When he gets to the refrain, he dodges despair and he goes for the visionary. The Harlem Children's Choir sings over and over, "War is over, if you want it. War is over now." It's an expression that he and Yoko Ono had coined 2 years earlier when he had displayed it on billboards in 12 cities around the world. And now, it's an expression that I'll invite you to sing along with underneath me. You can sing along with Debbie. Well, I am singing Lennon's timely and timeless Christmas verses.
So this is Christmas. Tell me, what have you done? Another year over, and a new one's just begun. So this is Christmas. I hope you have fun. The near and the dear ones, the old and the young, a very merry Christmas and a happy new year. Let's hope it's a good one without any fear. So this is Christmas, for weak and for strong, the rich and the poor ones, the road is so long. So happy Christmas, for black and for white, the yellow and red ones, that stop all the fight. A very merry Christmas and a happy new year. Let's hope it's a good one without any fear. New one's just begun. So happy Christmas, I hope you have fun, the near and the dear ones, the old and the young. A very merry Christmas and a happy new year. Hope it's a good one without any fear. War is over if you want it. War is over now.
Thus endeth the program, and I turn it back to you, Margaret.